All right, hey, I need you to say something funny for me, okay?
Okay.
It's for my podcast.
What's a podcast?
It's where I record myself talking, and then people listen to it on the internet.
Who would want to listen to that?
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, healthcare systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on digital tools, solutions, strategies, processes that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information, have a little bit of fun along the way. As always, I am joined by my partner in crime, Chris Boyer. You can find him online at Chris Boyer on all the major social platforms, Twitter, Snapchat, LinkedIn, all that kind of good stuff. You can find him on his site and blog, ChristopherBoyer.com, where he writes about spending time and effort and energy with hospitals and healthcare systems around the country, working on strategy and execution around digital marketing. Good day, Chris.
Hello, Reed. As always, I am also joined by my partner in crime. That is Reed Smith. You can find him also online. Most of the social channels out there by his name, at Reed Smith. And his website is socialhealthinstitute.com, where he talks about a variety of topics that are covering hospital, healthcare, digital marketing, social media. He's got a lot of great social media expertise. And, you know, quite frankly, he's got a great wry sense of humor.
This episode of Touchpoint is brought to you by one of our sponsors, Transparently.
Transparently is the nation's fastest growing platform for gathering and publishing physician star ratings and reviews. You can visit transparently.com to learn why the country's most innovative health systems are choosing them to power a better digital patient experience.
Again, to learn more, visit them online at transparently.com.
Here we are. Dog days of summer. Yes. I mean, it's the middle of the summer now, and we just had our 4th of July just pass us by, and I'm telling you, it's hot and humid outside.
That's right. As you're listening to this, we're about a week post 4th of July, so people are starting to come back from vacation, it seems, and you know, dig back in for a little bit before they take one last getaway before the summer's over with. So today we are obviously, if you've downloaded this episode, you know this already, but going to talk a little bit about video. So to this point, we've talked a lot about technology. We've even talked about content as a whole, but we have not talked about a specific type of content or execution of content, which we're doing today around the topic of video. So we'll talk a little bit about stats, why to do it, not to do it, platform-specific insights and tips, and then obviously just some kind of higher-level best practices and things to remember as you're doing that, as well as a wonderful interview with my friend and colleague at the Social Health Institute, a guy named Bobby Ratu.
Yeah, Bobby, that interview is really good. So look out for that. That's coming up soon. But Reed, you know, it's interesting. As we were prepping for this podcast, I was thinking back to, you know, we've been in this space for a long time now. And video has always been kind of lurking around on the sort of the outskirts. When YouTube kind of hit the scene in a really big way many, many years ago, people really saw video as a potential of being a really effective way to communicate online. But it didn't seem that video took off until very recently. I would say in the last maybe 4 or 5 years. From your perspective, why do you think that video is just suddenly now sort of the boom that it is?
At least in my mind, I think it really comes down to two things. One is historically we had this, I guess, a view that to do video you had to be a video professional, so you had to hire somebody and or have that in your background and own a bunch of really expensive equipment if you were going to do video. And I'm not saying there's not still a place for that, you know, high production, you know, assets, if you will. But I think one was we didn't really have a way to capture the video. And we're seeing that just in the general news media, right? I mean, we're running stuff on CNN and MSNBC and Fox and everywhere else that people have just, you know, phone submitted video, you know, kind of deal. So I think that's part of the equation. And I think the other half of it, which, you know, has come as a result of that, is we've gotten comfortable with that idea. So again, before it was like, well, I know you can record on your phone, but that's not really what we do here. And I think social and the adoption of social and mobile has driven that idea that, you know, what, it's okay with some basic tips and guidelines that we can capture some pretty good quality stuff. And, you know, the iPhone now has a camera that's, you know, better than most that we started with.
Yeah, I mean, I just recently moved and I found my old flip cam from many, many years ago. If you remember that, everybody had a flip cam, right? But yeah, but now we have these powerful phones in our cameras in our pockets that are part of our phones.
Yeah.
I mean, who uses the phone anymore to talk to people? It's mostly to create great content for the web. But I think that also, you know, our behavior as consumers online, as people online, seeing video has evolved as well as the technology has, and that now we're starting to see different types of videos, and we'll get into some of those videos, different, you know, ways to express yourself with video, both personally as well as professionally. And so now video has really come into its maybe the golden age of video. So there's some stats that we found that kind of talk to that fact that, you know, they say that video is projected to claim more than 80% of all web traffic by the year 2019.
Yeah, that's pretty much now. I mean, you know, I mean, that 2019 is not, you know, several years ago, that was like a decade away, you know, so we're quickly approaching that, you know, and two, you know, people like to watch things versus read things. You know, we're training people in that way. So you see things like, you know, adding video to marketing emails, for example, or other, you know, web assets can boost click-through rates by 200-300%.
That's crazy, right? And people are now wanting to see video before they're actually making decisions around, you know, not only buying things, but like, you know, where do they want to go? Right now I'm planning for our honeymoon, and we're watching videos about destinations we want to go. And we're not watching these professionally produced videos. We're also combining that with people that have gone there in person. So we're getting user-generated content videos to kind of help make our decisions. 90% of consumers say they use that to help them make decisions. In response, a lot of us are, as marketers, we're starting to really see the value of marketing. 87% of online marketers are currently using video as part of their strategies.
Right. And we think about YouTube being old, right? And it is. It's been around longer than most, if not all, of the social media platforms that we currently use. But just according to their own stats, you know, video consumption is growing by, you know, 100% every year. We've always heard that, you know, YouTube's the second largest search engine, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that holds true. I mean, you know, it's still what's driving a lot, you know, and that's, again, anybody can post and create whatever they want at any time.
And one last stat that I liked, or maybe not a stat, but like a quote that I heard from this digital marketing expert, James McQuivy, he said that he estimates that every single minute of video content is equivalent to 1.8 million words.
That's interesting.
Yeah, no longer is a picture worth 1,000 words. A video is worth 1.8 million words.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the multiplier effect, I guess, from photography to video. So, but I think it's interesting to realize, you know, as we go through these, what does that mean? Well, you know, every social platform we have now offers some sort of, or some form of, you know, a video streaming option. And you see this if you're uploading videos to Facebook, for example, and you see those, like, you know, autoplay when you scroll through, or, you know, Twitter's got the ability that you can play the video inside of the tweet without, you know, we're not linking out to other resources anymore. I mean, you can, but, you know, all these major platforms, you know, now offer that. And I think the other real piece of this is, and this is, you know, the code we're always trying to crack, which is, you know, how do you end up at the top of Google search results? Mm-hmm. And so if you start looking at things like video, you know, it improves that ability. You know, Google, you know, provides some level of credibility, you know, based on the effort you're putting in to some degree. Facebook with Facebook Live. Well, I mean, they like their own product. If you're producing those types of those videos, you know, we always talk about, you know, how the organic, you know, search and organic visibility of your Facebook content is going down. Well, this is one way you can combat that.
Yeah, you know, we talked a couple episodes ago about voice search and how that's impacting SEO. Video search is dramatically impacting SEO as well. And all of these platforms are figuring out ways that it can actually, you know, review video data, pull out meta information. It's no longer just tags and categories, but pulling out, you know, ways for people to easily find video. And this is certainly something here that we really want to, you know, kind of dive deep into. So, Reid, when we talk about video, a lot of times in hospitals and health systems, you know, there's typical types of videos that are being done. But, you know, as video is evolving, we probably want to kind of pivot to talk a little bit about some of the different types of videos that might be out there or that people are creating today and use that as a way to kind of spur some ideas.
Yeah. Well, and two, like when we started, we hospitals started creating video. Typically, we were videoing something that was already happening. It was somebody talking at the front of a room or an event or something like that. Now, we're not saying don't do those things, but that was really all we had. And so let's spend a little bit of time strategically thinking, well, how do we create video more proactively in the sense that how's this going to help us from a marketing communication standpoint? So, you know, first one, teach them to do something.
Gosh, I see these all the time on Facebook, right? Where they're the healthy recipes, where it's very visual, you know, top-down camera, showing them putting together ingredients, creating some kind of healthy recipe. It's very visually driven because of the way they're filming, how they're preparing the recipes. Those are some really good ones that I see. Very short, easy content to consume.
Yeah, anything with instructions. Usually instructions are aided pretty well by something visual. So recipes being one of those, exercises, stretching, you know, everybody, all these hospitals sponsor some sort of, you know, 5K or this, that, or the other. And you can get the, you know, physical medicine department or the PTs, you know, spending a bit of time on, you know, how to train. Well, you can write out how to train a training plan, but sometimes, you know, people don't know what those stretches mean. Or if you're talking about certain things like pronation versus supination and, you know, how to buy certain shoes and things like that, you know, visuals are really going to help with that.
I mean, even as something as simple as like how to wash your hands properly or how to apply sunscreen or, you know, how to visually diagnose what that mole is on your skin to determine if it's something to look at. Anything that's kind of related to teaching people to empower themselves to identify their own healthy behaviors or clinical treatments. Those are pretty good ways to teach them.
Hands only CPR, how to check your pulse, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on and on. Then we move to something like, you know, away from actually teaching or instructing and highlighting. So highlighting expertise, for example.
Doing maybe a seminar, now we're filming it, it's a webinar, or something like that. So physician talks, but now those talks are becoming more interactive. They're bringing them online, they're more in real time. They're able now to talk to and actually respond to comments real time as they're having these physician conversations about various health topics. That's a really great way to apply video. Also, it used to be, you know, the standard 90-second stand that doctor up in front of the video camera and have them talk about themselves, those bios. What we're seeing now is more and more bios that are becoming much shorter in length, 15, 30 seconds in length, used in various different places, applied to online physician profiles, but also applied to as a great way to kind of maybe highlight a new clinical practice that's opening, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, another idea would be, you know, highlighting, you know, areas around the hospital, service lines and things like that. The most common one, I'm guessing, or that would be most beneficial, I guess, at least, would be something like virtual tours. You know, people that know that they're coming to the hospital. So, like, don't, you know, the ER makes no sense because you don't know that you're going to go there necessarily. That's not really a thing. But if you're going to have a baby, you know, that's something that you're probably planning towards for, at a minimum, probably 6 months, you know, type thing. So you want to see the room. Does, you know, where's my spouse going to sleep? And does the bed fold out? Try to reduce that amount of anxiety around coming in by, you know, educating before they show up.
Through what to expect when you come in for your radiology appointment. You know, anything to really kind of highlight that overall experience. Video is a great way to make that, you know, make that better.
And then, you know, in the next one, showcase an event. So back to, again, we don't want to not do those things that are already happening. But these are great. You know, I mean, you see balloon releases for, you know, NICU reunions, for example, you know, something that's very visual. If you're going to record somebody standing at the front of the room, I'm not going to say there's not a use for that, back to highlighting expertise, but make sure that there is a way to actually push that forward and that you're, you know, reaching some goal with it. But anything, you know, from an event standpoint, obviously works really well.
And you could take that video and use it for not only to highlight that particular event, but maybe then you get some B-roll of many people interacting, any of these ribbon cutting ceremonies, that sort of thing. And then that kind of leads to, you know, the ability to provide some of that real-time coverage, like man on the street kind of old school reporting. But what's happening at this particular event, maybe even a news event that's breaking, you could use video in many different ways here to kind of showcase something that's occurring, which kind of leads to this new kind of approach too, which is this behind the scenes video work. Yeah, I'm seeing more and more of that, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really cool. I mean, I'd like to see more of it. I think that's interesting. I think it works well, even for short snippets, and especially as you're reaching out to, you know, younger audiences. So you think about things like Instagram, for example, not to jump into platforms. But, you know, how can you show behind the scenes? You know, this obviously works well for things like nurse recruiting or recruiting in general for clinical staff. You know, mm-hmm. allows you to show the type of organization that you are, culture, you know, actual brick and mortar behind the scenes, you know, that kind of thing.
I see like these social platforms like Snapchat and Instagram being used more and more as like almost a second camera that's capturing what's happening while they're producing a professional video shoot. It really adds an air of authenticity and transparency mm-hmm. to the actual event. And I'm finding that to be really exciting and quite frankly, engaging to watch.
One of my favorite video series that I watch is, growing up in Mississippi, I'm a big Ole Miss fan, and they've done a really nice job where they put together a show called The Season, and it's a weekly show, if you will, that I watch online, and you know, it's about the football team, and so you see the game's broadcast on television. Well, this is all happened during the week. Shows them in the weight room and on the field and has, you know, an interest story of some sort.
You know, this whole concept of the serialized video and serialized approaches to telling a story through video content, that's a great way to unfold a story or a strategy behind the story. But why don't we pivot now instead of talking about all the different types of videos, let's talk about some tips maybe that we would give to people as they're looking at video, and then maybe we can go into some of the specific tips for each social media platform.
You know, I'll kick off with just that one we just ended with, which is knowing your audience. So again, much like we always talk about how we don't want to put the same content, you know, just copy paste across all of our platforms, but sometimes we don't think about that in a video standpoint. The update on Facebook is not the same update that we used on Twitter, so why should the video be? Maybe it should, maybe it shouldn't, but again, where's the audience? Who are you talking to? What do they want to know about?
Also, think about different types of audiences, right? Like instead of the health seeker, the consumer, the patient, the family member, you could also create video to engage your physician audiences. Mm-hmm. So you could create some content, good CME content, or even if you're trying to promote a residency program, maybe creating some video to show what the residency life would look like. Maybe even make that hand produced, you know, by the residents themselves. That's a great, compelling way to create content that's relevant to those audiences.
You know, there's those things that carry over as well, just from a tips standpoint, from, say, photography. You know, rule of thirds, you know, so have some sort of depth of field, horizontal, not vertical with your phone, you know, stuff like that I think a lot of people have heard, you know, or at least see or hear over and over again. If you don't know what those are, you know, certainly can track that down pretty easily. One that I thought was interesting that was actually a tip that Bobby, our expert interview that's coming up, gave me once upon a time, This is more specific to video than it is photography, but it's zoom with your feet.
Ooh.
So don't use the zoom feature on your phone when you're doing video. Physically move closer is his point. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, some of it is, you know, as you zoom in on video, it gets a little grainy. If someone moves out of frame, it's really hard to zoom back out very quick, and it's just kind of real disjointed. So I thought that was an interesting one. And I think what he means by that too is don't be scared to like get up and actually, you know, show what's happening. You know, you can see great examples of this, like on YouTube, especially with things like we mentioned hands-only CPR earlier. You can find the video of the guy demonstrating hands-only CPR, and I can see him and the wall he's standing against and this mannequin on a table, and it's just a fixed frame the whole time. Don't be scared to get up and like just get in on his hands and show what he's doing there. Like, we know there's a person there. I don't need to see the wall behind him, and I really don't even need to see him talking. Like, show me, and we talked about the instructional stuff earlier, get up and show something up close.
I think a shout out to our old friend Jason Pratt, right? We always want to shoot horizontally video.
Yes.
Don't want to ever shoot vertical video. And I know that he probably earns a quarter every time we say that somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, he's our old friend and colleague. He used to work for the Mayo Clinic and very, very big video enthusiast. But he advocates all the time about don't waste the camera field by shooting either vertically or in the case that you were mentioning, Reed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to bring in the black, the white background. You focus in on what's actually the topic of what you're filming.
What's another tip you've got?
Well, I think social has changed a lot the way we consume video. So what we're finding is videos are being shortened a lot. There's a time and a place for long form content, and certain platforms are better for long form content, like your website and YouTube. And Facebook Live is sort of a longer form video. But most videos, if you're doing a more instructional, you really want to shoot for 60 seconds is about the right mark. And if you think about that, what does that mean? That means you have to really edit it down. Just highlight the specific things that you need. Way back in the day, we were like shooting for 3-minute videos. And then they were like, well, let's take that in half. Let's make it to 1.5 minutes. And now we're trying to 60 seconds. And even sometimes when you watch video online, 60 seconds can seem like a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the example I always give is like when we were growing up or when I was growing up, like in the early 80s, for example, and video cameras just came around. Number one, it looked like, you know, News Station 5 was showing up, you know, because I mean, it's like camera on the shoulder and like extra bags and cables and tripods and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you go back and watch those home videos, what you'll realize pretty quickly is they're way too long. It's like we don't need that much footage. And so a little bit goes a long way. I would even front load the message because no matter how long the video is, people are going to drop out over the course of the video. It can be 9 seconds. People are going to drop out before the end. That's just the way it is.
I've worked on some marketing campaigns where we did a 15-minute video segment to highlight people to go watch the 1.5-minute video segment, which is really an intro to maybe a 5-minute video segment. Think about that, you know, like how you're using shorter form to lead people to get more engaged with longer form video. The other thing I mentioned on a couple episodes ago, a lot of people consume video now on their mobile devices, but they're in the public, right? They're out in the open. And they don't really have maybe their audio on. So you always want to start to use captions. Social media has brought back that era of the silent video. So now you're getting it in two ways. You're getting the words and the video. For me, that really appeals because I'm one of those persons I'd love to watch foreign films because I love to read subtitles.
I can't stand foreign films because of that very reason. But, you know, you've heard about second screen for a long time. And so everybody's on their iPad or phone or whatever while they're watching television. Well, they don't want two audio sources. So they've got TV going. And this way allows them to consume your content as they're, you know, scrolling through Facebook, for example, without that, you know, audio competing.
Tell your story with no sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
Figure out a way where you can tell the story so it doesn't require sound. I mean, that's not to say don't add sound, but if you could get it to the point where you're telling a good visual story with just the visual pieces. I see this a lot on like Instagram stories where they're doing, you know, where many hospitals are doing these really nice sort of serialized approaches where it's almost like a title card that leads to another title card that leads to another title card, and then maybe and interspersed some graphic, you know, images. Well, I wouldn't say graphic, but, you know, images into it.
Although graphic images do help.
They do capture the attention.
Yes. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And we're not really even getting into, and this is probably a topic for another day, but animation. That's another way that you can explain, or that, you know, explainer video kind of that they call it. You know, another thing is when you're interviewing folks, this is another great tip. Start recording, but start having a conversation. Don't just jump right into the interview. Mm-hmm. You know, try to get them to feeling comfortable. The problem is, in most cases, is we're willing to watch any length of video as long as it's compelling. And somebody that feels real stiff and scripted and this, that, and the other is not very compelling. So if you can start a conversation and get people talking, and then all of a sudden they don't realize they're being interviewed, like they don't realize you've started, makes much, much better video, especially from an interview standpoint.
That conversational tone in video is very, very important. And you want to try to bring that forward. People don't like scripted videos anymore. There's a reason why we're watching reality TV, because we feel it's unscripted, even though a lot of times it is scripted. But so now it's moving more and more towards, you know, determining, maybe even creating an outline of what you want to talk about, but try to conversationally guide through those talking points without actually writing out the script. Teleprompter scripting is kind of a thing that's becoming passé now.
Pulls out that personality of the subject as well, which is always good. Hey, Chris, before we go too much further, jump into this next segment of the podcast, I did want to mention and thank one of our sponsors, Influence Health. You know, they've got a consumer experience platform that covers several things. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we've talked about content management systems on this podcast.
Yeah, we did.
What about CRMs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we covered CRMs for sure.
And then obviously each and every week we talk about digital marketing. So digital marketing systems, you know, in one way, shape or form have probably been covered, right?
That's right. Digital marketing systems. And I would say that we even talk about it in a way of that overall digital consumer experience.
Well, there you go. I would recommend for anybody interested in one of those topics or anything else, they've also got some complimentary solutions on their website. But head over to their website, take a look at what they've got and what they're offering relative to CMS, CRM, digital marketing systems, kind of how all that is woven together in what they call their consumer experience platform. Find your way over to influencehealth.com. Maybe let's jump in and talk a little bit about some of the platform-specific pieces.
You know, when we get into social media, they're all now doing their own videos and video platforms.
Yeah.
And each one of these are kind of different. We talked about different types of audiences. We talked about, you know, different purposes. One of the first things I would recommend is if you're looking to add like maybe Facebook Live or Instagram or whatever to your video sort of outreach efforts, spend a lot of time looking at what other people are doing so you get a feel of what your audience is used to, what's unique to that platform. But having said that, I think that there's a handful of tips we can give for these different platforms. So I'll start out with the first one, Reed, about Facebook Live. The thing about Facebook Live is you hear a lot of times where people just turn on their camera and they're live streaming. But a lot of times if you're doing Facebook Live as part of your outreach efforts, you probably want to have a strategy. You want to have some scripting. You should have a purpose.
And two, this helps you because everybody's going to want to do whatever the newest thing is, right? So you've got to have some guidelines around when we take pictures, when we do video, and when we do live video. Because everybody's going to want to do whatever the new thing is. And just flipping on the camera works if you're a celebrity or if you just want your friends, you know, to see it. You know, if you're just an individual and, you know, maybe you've got something going on in your life and you're wanting to share that or whatever. That's the only time that works.
Facebook Live doesn't only have to be with your camera, right? They have now, there's a tool called OBS that's a free tool that allows you to turn your studio cameras into Facebook Live streaming devices. Mm-hmm. So basically they're using stream codes so you could create great video now for your Facebook Live. And that's a common complaint with Facebook Lives is people say, well, I can't really hear it very well because, right, you know, you're using your phone or what have you. So if you're going to be doing it in a more professional setting, think about extending the way you film this to these other devices so you get good video quality and more, most importantly, good audio quality.
This is you becoming the news media. As things are time sensitive, this may make sense. And so if you think about like announcements, for example, maybe it's new construction or expansion or whatever, you know, and there's going to be a press conference. This is a good opportunity to do that.
Also, you know, Facebook Live has the ability for people to add comments as you're watching it. And what's hard to do is if you're filming it and trying to read the comments, you're going to go crazy. A lot of times people are like, they bring in a moderator to their job is to just cull through the comments. And particularly if you're going to start taking questions from them, right? If you're going to say, let's say you're doing a video chat with a doctor and you ask people on Facebook to submit questions, you want to have a moderator there to be able to cull through the questions and maybe even prompt the doctors afterwards. Don't try to do it all yourself because you won't have the ability to pay attention. And what's also so cool, just recently introduced something really new, is that now Facebook Live lets you target your video to specific video audience. You could actually do, you know, hyper targeting with your video, with your Facebook Lives. You could say, I only want my followers that are women or in this geocode.
That's very cool.
Or what have you. That allows you to start to do some very hyper focused Facebook Live videos. Let's talk about Twitter/Periscope now.
You can use Periscope, which is the Twitter specific video streaming app, to, you know, produce content and be live, if you will, on Twitter. Again, you can use it with hashtags and, you know, targeting the conversation, i.e. around conferences or events. You know, maybe there's some geographic hashtags that are real popular for your area, you know, whatever it may be. You can save this content to a camera roll. You can use it on other platforms.
Periscope is create Periscope Producer, which is a professional platform. So now you could tie your Periscope or your Twitter video, right, to a really good video camera. And now, again, we're getting to the point now where it becomes an official video broadcast medium. YouTube is still there, though, and solid. Let's not underestimate YouTube. But I really see YouTube as a place where it's really good for search and SEO. You know, you really want to focus in on how you phrase your titles, making sure your titles have SEO words in them, including your hospital name. The first 150 words of your description or your caption should be very much SEO rich content, and all the tags that you could add. Tags are a great way to kind of put metadata against your videos. Use both long tail and high neck tags, so you're getting both the general and the very specific video searches.
It's still, you know, a great way to, you know, house and manage video as well. So there's an operational component as well.
And YouTube is really a place for long form video, long form content. And it does really well to drive action. You can still do the, you know, where you're putting call to actions and end screens to get people to click on the video to do more. Mm-hmm. And of course, don't forget YouTube advertising. YouTube pre-roll advertising is still very, very powerful when you're doing any kind of, if you're investing in any kind of online advertising, YouTube pre-roll is a really great, powerful way to get out there and get your message out there.
So Instagram stories, this is something probably a little bit newer. Maybe not as many people have played with this as they have, you know, maybe something like obviously the YouTube property, but, you know, even Facebook Live. This is something where, you know, you can update this every so often. At least in my opinion, having several elements to it versus just, you know, one kind of screen capture, if you will, is more engaging.
This is that sequential stuff that we were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. A good example, if you look at Cleveland Clinic's Instagram stories, every day they do one that's sort of a sequential storytelling. And sometimes they're not just videos, they're just flat static cards, but it gives a sense of a sort of an animated advertisement, right? And the very last piece, you could click through to the website to learn more. The other thing about Instagram too, Reed, is that, you know, you talked about the rule of thirds earlier. Well, forget that. In Instagram stories, square videos are becoming the thing.
Anyway, look for some other great examples out there. You mentioned the Cleveland Clinic. But go to some of the other big organizations and even people that you know that, do pretty well in digital and see kind of what they're doing there. Talk a little bit about Snapchat.
Everybody, when they refer to Snapchat as part of digital marketing, we may want to do a whole episode on just this. But people kind of refer to it as like, tell me about Snapchat. Like, I'm not really so sure that that's a good platform. What is interesting about that, about Snapchat, is it's still trying to establish itself as a viable marketing platform. I would say right now that really, when you're talking about Snapchat, a lot of people already pigeonhole it and say it's only for the younger audiences, it's only for these types of people. But the thing about Snapchat is it's a very informal platform. It's a great way to build engagement. You could actually communicate directly. A lot of brands are using Snapchat stories to engage with their audience and getting the audience to do user-generated video responses and respond back directly. So that one-to-one, I mean, really one-to-one connection with some of their audiences that are out there. There's all this other stuff that you have, like these geo filters that you can get. You can actually create now geo filters right in the app. You could do it. I just heard they just released this last release, you could buy a geo filter for as little as $5.99.
Oh, wow.
So now you can get people to promote you right in the app itself, right? But where I see an interest in, quite honestly, with Snapchat is to do influencer marketing in a weird, kind of strange way, right? Because some of the future forward people that you may want to influence that are younger, that are using Snapchat, they're there. You could directly target content to select followers. And so I think that that's really of an interest. It's still marginalized as a whole platform, Snapchat, but this is a great way to start to maybe experiment, to start to do some influencer marketing, I believe. Again, the story's still out on this one. We're not really sure the actual application. I see a lot of informal back behind the scenes video right now being used in these platforms.
The other one that comes to mind for me is, of course, this goes back to recording stuff that's already happening. But we do have some platforms out there where you can repurpose stuff like continuing medical education. So CMEs or even CNEs, et cetera. But a way to capture that content, use a certain platform to reach an audience, a clinical audience in this case, with education and with resources. So some organizations are doing quite a bit of that.
Amazon has the Show, right? Which is a sort of like a tablet that's tied to voice search that now we're going to get video content delivered from that. So that's a new platform that I see coming, and we're going to have one for Google and one for Apple and all the other platforms that are there. And, you know, there's a variety of other tools that are out there, new social tools, new ways to interact that we're going to see organizations use that. You know, video is getting into email, it's getting into text messaging, it's getting into multiple different platforms. And I think that, you know, all of this stuff is really interesting. What I see, though, ultimately, Reed, is that video is here to stay, and it's threatening, maybe not threatening, but becoming a prominent placement of content online. So any last thoughts on video?
Yes, I think you need to do it. I think there needs to be a strategy around it, however, of, you know, what are we doing? How often are we doing it? Where does it go? What does it do? What's the end goal? You know, much like anything else that we're doing in the digital space. Now, we'll say, you know, some of that is, you know, you need to play with it to some degree, or at least I do, to really understand, well, how would I use this? So again, looking for those opportunities, you know, to take advantage.
Touch point, touch counterpoint. There are two sides to every story. Ready, fight!
All right, now we're launching into our touch point, touch counterpoint part of the podcast, where Reed and I face off on a controversial topic, which we may or may not agree with, but we definitely use this as a platform to kind of argue the extremes in a way to kind of see exactly if there is some validity to these extremes. And I think usually we pick a topic that is related to that topic at hand, and today is like that. I believe today, Reed, we should discuss, will video kill the written word? That is, should marketers primarily invest in video content online and make writing content secondary priority to their efforts?
Is that a song? Video will kill the written word.
Okay. Yeah, it was from the 80s, right?
Yeah, I think so. No way. It'll never happen. Yeah, there's too much need, especially in healthcare, for things that are written, not to mention SEO value and things like that. There's no way it kills it.
Well, Reed, in this very episode, we talked about the fact that SEO is strongly becoming influenced now by video. And I would say that if Google and Facebook and Twitter have the ability to kind of now scrub through the content that's spoken on a video piece that you produce, then SEO certainly can drive people to the right video platforms. Let's face it, people like video, people consume video. Even you yourself have admitted that you'd rather watch something than read something. I think that video is becoming a predominant way of interacting with content online.
Yes. I mean, again, it's going to continue to increase in popularity. It's going to continue, increase in consumption. It's not going to surpass the written word in the sense that even from a credibility standpoint, we're not going to see, physicians, for example, make journal entries, and things like that based on video. They're still writing, they're still publishing, books are still a huge industry. Web content writers, that's not going away anytime soon. There's just too much around the written word to say that, we're just going to, set that to the side or make that secondary.
I would say that if you ask any doctor or physician around, that it's much easier for them to speak into a camera than it is to write something down. And it actually is a great way for them to capture their notes along the way. So I would say that video is a big threat to journaling, like you mentioned. And you could, if given the right tools in hand and being able to have cameras in virtually every device that's out there, then why can we not see? Just because it doesn't exist there today doesn't mean that in the future, video can replace, imagine, even the electronic medical record.
Audio maybe bleeds into that a little bit more. I don't think video will, at least, not in the foreseeable future. I think even from an instructional or research perspective, we need that in black and white on a page to be able to reference versus where does this exist in the video somewhere and how am I going to find it? And I'm going to have to start and stop and pause and all this kind of stuff as I'm toggling back and forth between what I'm doing and this piece of research that I need, to reference, for example.
Well, if you have the video playing, let's say on the glasses, superimposed on the inside of your glasses or on the wall of your office, and you have audio ability to fast forward and rewind, I would say that it's a video experience is much more in depth than reading it from a computer screen or even hearing it, because then you can, in a clinical setting, you can actually see what they're talking about. You could actually visually see that and compare that to the real life. I actually think that video is a stronger platform to communicate messaging from because you have audio and video together. And as we talked about, you could also put text on the screen if you'd like to. And so now you're getting three of your senses satisfied with the video platform. Video is the best type of content.
Yeah, until your hospital gets ransomed. And then you've still got to go back to paper charts. I mean, we're seeing that now. The default is still the written word.
Well, paper charts, Reed, come on. I mean, we have laws that, tell us that we have to have electronic medical records. Ransomware aside, I think that, if we look at content that's electronic, video content, if you have the ability to access it, review it, search it, reference it, becomes so much more valuable to any user. You have a much more robust platform in which to communicate. And that, in and of itself, outweighs and trumps every other type of content there is. And therefore, I think the hospital website of the future is just going to be a video library.
I can't even imagine the IT support and instruction that we're going to have if that's the case versus over what we have now, you know, the known entity of the written word. I don't think we can support it.
Okay, you got me there. It does take a little bit more more to produce a video, but it's certainly the return on investment is that much greater.
Yeah, and the cost of storage and memory and all that kind of stuff is obviously a lot less than it used to be. I can remember when I went to the hospital as the marketing director in 2003. I think that's right, 2003. I may be off a year, but anyway, we had a digital camera. It could take 8 pictures at a time, and then I'd have to like download them to the computer.
You know, and now we have iPhones that you could
thousands
film.
And thousands of pictures and videos on.
You know, there are examples here too where video is probably not good for people that are need their eyes somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like if they're driving, that's, you know, audio content surpasses that. And there are some people that actually still prefer the written word because it allows you to get a little bit more deeper. I can imagine, you know, having, like you said, scrolling through WebMD, experiencing that on an audio way or a video way might be a little bit difficult for people to search through to get the right type of content.
All right, we're back with the expert interview portion of the podcast, which is always fun. And today, I'm very fortunate to be joined by Bobby Ratu, my partner in crime and actual partner in the Social Health Institute. You can find him online, much of the places you can find me at socialhealthinstitute.com, Bobby Ratu on Twitter and many of the other social platforms. Bobby, thanks for hanging out for a few minutes.
What's going on in Texas today?
Yo, tell everybody a little bit about your background so they understand, obviously, while we're chatting, but a little bit about your background as it relates to video and maybe some of the things that you're working on right now.
I was a journalist for many years. I worked for many local TV stations and a couple national outlets. Specifically, I was a photojournalist. I worked out of South Carolina. I worked out of Arizona, and I worked across the country in both domestic and international stories. So I spent most of my journalist career carrying a camera, a pretty large camera compared to what we have today.
You used to actually have to have them like inside of helicopters and mounted on stuff and like additional people to carry all the stuff.
Yes, it was ridiculous. I mean, you'd have someone carrying half the camera so you could walk with the front part of the camera. So I cut my teeth in the video world, literally in tape-to-tape edit bays where you would have 2 VCR style machines, tape edit suites connected by wires, and you would use a keyboard to make them work. And wow. So that was the early days of me learning how to do video. My undergraduate was in mathematics, and many people ask me, like, why does that matter? And I tell people that it taught me to think in proportions, specifically how to frame shots, how to edit in sense of proportion. So really got out of television at a time when media was changing. My last big assignment was Katrina. And after Katrina, I left the journalistic world for the business world and started working for a startup company here in South Carolina that was pre-YouTube days of sharing video through Flash video and email. And so I really started to understand the idea of taking video content and distributing it online very quickly for audiences to engage with in a way that was different and unique. And as YouTube emerged, the company kind of died out. And so I was able to convert a lot of that client base into a business of my own, where we would serve many North and South Carolina companies, specifically healthcare organizations, how to use video inside their organization to connect from a business-to-business standpoint, you know, physicians referring to physicians, seeing them talk about the practice that they have and why they should refer across the system, to business to consumer of explaining what the service may be. And here's a face of a physician, and this is why, this is what I look and sound like, so that you might talk to me and consider me for helping you. And then really to help advocacy groups really sway legislation as it relates to the Affordable Care Act. I spent many years working on that. So
you and I both spend a lot of time, as does Chris, obviously, in and out of hospitals around the country. You know, some of that's, you know, web related and whatnot, but more specifically to social and maybe even just content creation in general. You know, I continue to hear more and more, and have for probably a couple of years now, we want to do more video. Kind of what are some of your thoughts, or what you're telling folks relative to, you know, when you hear kind of that blanket statement, you know, we want to create more video, we want to produce more video, we need more video, you know, on our social channels or on our website or whatever.
When you were talking about that, the first thing I thought of is a great talk by Gary Vee, or many of us know him as Gary Vaynerchuk. He's kind of that, I would say, pioneer in this world where he understands the idea of using visual mediums to connect with people. The idea that our attention spans are so small, and how do we communicate to an audience that's in consistent mode of scrolling their phone? How do we get them to stop for a brief second to engage with our content in a way that's meaningful, and they know our story, in this very wild, crazy attention span mentality? And with that mindset, I've really tried to work with hospitals to think that way. Like, how can we build a strategy that really engages the audience to do many things, and it's really to connect with our content? Because hospitals have a powerful story to tell, and they have an opportunity to really bring the user into the walls of the hospital to see it beyond the corporate speak, to really hear from the physicians and the patients and to see the daily lives. When we work with hospitals, you know, we ask a few questions immediately. Is number one is, how do I do video? Specifically, how do I, person in a hospital, do it every day? What can I do to do that? Second is how do I hire people to do it for me? Especially for medium-sized hospitals or small critical access that don't have an AV department or a traditional AV department, they have to go hire it out. And what does that look like? And then third is, with that said, what is a strategy? Why should we do it? Why do we care about it? Most hospitals know that they've got to do it because they realize that the new audiences that they're connecting with are typically the millennial moms. You know, they're the ones that are the decision makers for their loved ones, specifically their children, their husbands, their parents, and their grandparents. And that audience connects very well with video. They use it as a research methodology to engage in, is this the right place for my family? And so I want to feel that this is the right choice. And so how do we display that feel? And video is a great place to do it. It gets beyond the textual words. And so we look at it, say, hey, if an office, a marketing office or a critical access group wants to do more video, do they have time to do it themselves? Are they willing to use their phones and go out and use video in a way that really brings the user inside? And if they don't, because they've got so many other things on their plate, how do we hire it? And how do we communicate to those groups that are supporting us, this is the way that we want to create it? And so that's kind of the first discussions that we have.
If you want to place AdWords, you can go read some blog posts and this, that, and the other, and some tutorials, and figure out how to do that and get some things placed. You know, video or things more in the creative space are maybe not quite that way. They're not quite as black and white. So what's your recommendation for those folks, you know, looking to create more video for social? You know, maybe they've even created videos historically, but they've been more of those brand pieces, you know, 3.5 minute videos that live on YouTube or whatever. Maybe they're TV commercials.
I would say first couple things that I would decide is, one is accept that you're going to do it, and that you're going to do it yourself to figure it out. And you're going to start with something very small and use that as a way to grow on success. Pick a service line. Say, hey, we want to do more video in labor and delivery. And let's use video to Maybe hear mom talk about this, I just had my child and I'm so thankful. Or is it showing the baby interaction with the grandparents? What are the little areas inside the hospital that you can start with that you know that you're willing to learn by using this medium, and two, that you can gain the most traction? And so start small. Find that place that you want to start with. And then once you figure out what that is, let's talk about, hey, how do we want to do it? And so it's learn the tools. Learn how to use your phone. The phone, the iPhone and the Android devices are powerful tools. They have sensors that were better than the cameras that I was shooting with 15 years ago. So they shoot really, really good solid pieces. So learn how to hold the phone, hold it horizontal, how to keep it steady, how to set people up to ask them questions and interview them. How do I take that and edit it something quick that I can post quickly? So learning the little editing programs inside the apps inside your phone, and not be afraid to make mistakes. The biggest thing that people worry about is that they are going to offend someone, have a HIPAA violation. They're going to make the CEO mad because they put something on Facebook. Go ahead and create kind of a path at which you're going to be successful, and just go out and do it. Don't be afraid to use your phone, but to learn the tools. There are so many tools out there right now that can be used. Little microphones that you can add to your phone that just plug right in. Little tripods that you can add to your phone to keep it steady. Even little stabilizers that you can hook your phone to them so that when you walk around and you're capturing video, it makes it look professional and smooth, that are really inexpensive, that are not $1,000 or $200, $300. And that may sound expensive, but the cost to go hire someone to do it is so much more. So it gives you a tool to use very quickly to solve these problems. Have someone like us come in and show you the tools to teach you how to use it. Because at the end of the day, we want to provide you the tools to do it on your own, because you're going to be the strongest brand advocate inside the organization. And so what better person to do it than you, hospital person, to tell your own narrative?
I think this is great. I think there's a lot of takeaways here, a lot of really cool stuff I think people can take and use.
And I think one thing that I think another topic that I think we could explore as well is using the Facebook ad platform with video. Because that is a huge opportunity to learn not who you're reaching, but how much time in the video is being consumed. Our research has shown us that if you put $20 or $30 behind a video, the ad platform is going to show you if that video is being watched over 15 seconds. It gives you a wealth of information. So there's a lot of opportunities there to think through. And then, you know, my last tip would be is don't try to shoot a 3-minute video the first time. Keep it short, 30 seconds. Create 30-second snippets that tell something quickly and get people on to something better. And because at the end of the day, you don't want to overwhelm them. You want to tease them to explore.
And that's great stuff. He is Bobby Ratu. You can find him on Twitter at Bobby Ratu. That's BobbyRattew. Socialhealthinstitute.com. We'll have obviously all the links in the show notes. Bobby, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, we're wrapping up our episode on video. It was a great episode. We covered a lot of topics today, carried some super pro tips. I have to give a special shout out to a number of people, including Margaret Shepherd, my fiance. She gave me some good ideas on some of the social media pieces. I kind of have to give her a little shout out, Reed. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you did, so I'm not sure.
Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe we should edit that out. I'm not sure.
It's too late now.
But a lot of people have contributed. I mean, obviously, Bobby Ratu gave us great tips on the interview. And, mm-hmm. We got a lot of good links to some articles and stuff that we'll be feeding through our LinkedIn and our Twitter stream. But yeah, thanks to all those other people that kind of helped us out. So before we close the show, we always do a recommendation. And Reed, I'm wondering, what is your recommendation?
Mine is, you know, half in the digital world, I guess, or kind of digital-ish. When I was in school, you had to have a like a scientific calculator of some sort. I don't even know. Is that a thing? Do people still do that?
Like the old Texas Instruments type of calculator?
Yeah. It has a whole bunch of buttons. You don't know what they do. But anyway, I still have mine from junior high. And it sits on my desk. And I use it quite often. And so my recommendation is a calculator. So I know your phone's got a calculator. I know the computer or the internet or whatever, you can type stuff in. But it's really handy sometimes just to be able to, you know, tactically type something in a calculator and get computations out of it. So mine, they don't make anymore, is a Texas Instruments. And it's a TI-30 SLR Plus. I'm going to guess this is from 90, maybe. Oh, no, here it is, 1987.
Wow.
And it still has the quick reference card in it. You know, so now if I need to, you know, figure out like a trigonometry, you know, function or converting an angle or something, I could do that with this quick reference card. But anyway, my recommendation is to have a calculator. And I'll put a link to one, the new one, from Texas Instruments, TI-30. They make a couple of different ones. So there's like a 30XA and a 30X, anyway, et cetera. So I recommend picking one of those up for about $14-15.
Now, Reed, is this one of these calculators where you have to press the number, then the enter sign, and then the number, and then the function?
No. So it's not a graph. It doesn't graph anything.
Okay.
So it's not the crazy one that you used for like geometry, you know, and stuff like that.
Right.
This is just a scientific calculator.
Well, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm being a math person. I love calculators, so that's a good recommendation. All right. Well, my recommendation is also a little bit old school. And I was thinking about this over the weekend. I saw for the first time in real life one of family members that has a fidget spinner.
Oh, boy.
And I was thinking fidget spinners, and I know we recommended those before, but I was thinking, boy, what do we have in the old days when we didn't have fidget spinners? Because I was kind of a nervous kid, you know?
I have an answer to that as well, but let me see if you can go.
So for me, it was Legos. I used Legos, right? I even had a steamer trunk full of Legos. I would always go get Legos. And this isn't that, you know, the new school Legos where you piece it together to make a special, like, Star Wars thing or whatever. These are the old building block Legos. Well, very recently, in the last couple of years, I discovered that Lego put out a special edition of their Lego set called the Architecture Series. And if you know what this is, right, it's a box of like maybe 500, 600 pieces of just the standard squares, rectangles, different size shapes. They're all white. And
there's some clear ones in there as well.
Oh, that's right.
For like Windows or whatever.
Yeah, like Windows or whatever. And they also released it with a book, and it brings in architects across the world, and they show how they use Legos to help inspire them for new designs. And the whole intention here is that this is supposed to provide you that sort of that creative outlet when you want to do something, maybe you're fidgety with your hands, and you can build really quickly an inspired type of Lego design that really is more designed on the shape than it is on the colors and the pieces and things like that. So anyway, I'm really in love with it. I have it right here by my desk, and I have to say I dip into it every so often when I, you know, just when I'm trying to inspire some creativity in my mind. So the Lego Architecture Series, we'll put a link in our show notes where you can actually buy that, but that's my recommendation. Now, I'm curious though, Reed, what was your thought about when I was saying when you were younger what you did?
Butterfly knife.
Oh.
I'm not sure those are legal, but that is a very common fidget spinner. knees.
Well, you cannot recommend knives 2 weeks in a row, so you'll have to save that for a future one.
Yeah, I'll stick with the calculator. Well, very cool. Great episode. Something that's very important and needs more and more attention and will require more and more attention. So we'll probably go deeper on some of these topics, again, things like animation. But if you've got any feedback on the episode or future episode, topic ideas, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter, LinkedIn, wherever you find us. And again, as you make your way over to iTunes, if you would subscribe, rate, and review, we'd certainly appreciate it. And of course, good old-fashioned word of mouth, recommendations to friends, family, colleagues, bosses, employees, all that kind of good stuff is always a great way that you can help us out. Mm-hmm. He is Chris Boyer. I'm Reed Smith. We had a blast, and we'll see you next week.